Welcome to the Anderson Business Advisors Podcast, the nationally recognized preferred provider for asset protection and tax planning in the nation. This show is for investors and business owners looking to save on taxes and build long-term wealth with Toby Mathis, an attorney, author, business owner, and a featured instructor at Anderson's Tax and Asset Protection event held throughout the country. Enjoy the show.
Hey guys, Toby Mathis here from the Anderson Business Advisors podcast. And today I have Dwayne Blank from Anderson Financial Services. And you have another company too, Dwayne?
I do. I actually have a group called Canyon Ridge Group Wealth Management Firm.
And so a lot of times when you're working with licensed professionals, we do things, we like to keep things branded. But again, somebody has their own life and then they have the stuff we do together. And Dwayne's an expert in a particular area that I really wanted to talk about today. And that is buy-sell agreements, key man policies, all these things that you heard of but know nothing about. So I'm going to say, first off, welcome, Dwayne.
Thank you, Toby. Appreciate it.
And maybe you can give a little background on where you grew up and all that fun stuff so people know who you are.
Sure, Toby. Thanks for the opportunity today. Again, as Toby mentioned, Dwayne Blake. I grew up in the state of West Virginia, migrated south with military when I was a young man, went back to college for several years, got a couple of degrees in the sciences, and then I had the opportunity to start an engineering firm when I was a young man in my 20s. With that engineering firm in place, I learned a lot about both the business world, being a marketer, being a business owner, and one of the best experiences was learning about the business I'm in today, which is the financial services industry. Actually, I have two kids who are productive in society, a daughter who's a nurse. She's down in the Florida, Georgia border area, St. Mary's, Georgia. And my son is a mining engineer out in the St. Louis area. And I currently reside down in Southeast Georgia, Toby.
How did you avoid becoming a mining engineer?
Well, I was actually a petroleum geologist for a little while and then an environmental scientist and sold that company when I was in my 30s. I guess my son has always been smarter than I've ever was, and he took the engineering side and I took the geology side.
I heard a good one. It was a economist from Texas A&M, and he said he likes to bug people just by saying, "Hey, in Texas, we learned how to frack a tree." He watches the everybody just roll their eyes like find stuff like that particularly amusing. You can't frack a tree, but he's just like, "Hey, we figured out how to frack a tree," just to tick them off. So how did you end up in the financial services world?
Yeah, it's. I always tell people it's totally by accident. And then obviously being a geologist and a wastewater engineer, I had my own practice, as I mentioned, that I had that for about 5 or 6 years. We were doing extremely well and I had a silent partner. And as we progressed through business, you know, I learned a lot about, as I mentioned, being a business owner and all the things that come with that, other than just trying to make money, trying to preserve your livelihood, preserve your the business that you built. And when I sold that company back in, I guess it was 97, I had signed a non-compete clause, obviously, with the firm that bought us out. And the opportunity was either go do something else for 3 or 4 years while your non-compete was cooking off, or sit on the sidelines and count the few dollars that you got from the sale of the business. I actually invested the money in the Pittsburgh markets with Fortune 100 Group, and that group asked me to take a look at the opportunity in financial services, and I thought that was the craziest thing in the world, although I had learned a lot about it in the previous 5 or 6 years from my advisors. So with that non-compete in hand and some money in my pocket, I decided to enter this group in Pittsburgh, and since then I've developed a few Fortune 100 corporate jobs down the road, and then I've now become a business owner myself again.
Very cool. So you sold a business. How did you first hear of key man and buy sell? And was it in that setting or was it after you became a professional?
Yeah, being a geologist, you know, we do what we do. A lot of jokes there, like you just mentioned one. But at the end of the day, I was a really good scientist and a decent marketer and a pretty good businessman. But I was sitting on my desk one day in Morgantown, West Virginia, where the offices were located, the corporate offices. And a gentleman dropped in one day and went to the receptionist desk and asked if he could meet with the owner, me. And so she graciously showed him in, and I would receive about anybody in the office to see what they were pitching. And he sat down, and he's a pleasant fellow, a little bit older than me, obviously, had some years of experience. And he started asking me some very open questions about, you know, hey, how's the business? How's this? How's that? And then about the background, he read the room and knew that I was a fisherman, et cetera, knew I was an Army officer in the Guard. But at the end of the day, he asked me some pretty tough questions. And he said to me, he said, Dwayne, he said, you know, I work in the financial services industry. And he said, I wanted to ask you a few questions about your partnership. And the question he basically came up with first was, if you didn't make it home from work tonight for some reason, he said, where does that leave your spouse, your wife, in this partnership? And I said, you know, his name's Jerry. I said, Jerry, I really never thought about it. He said, well, let me ask you another question. He said, do you like your partner, your financial partner that's invested in you? I said, he's a nice guy. Sure, he's pretty good. He's younger than me. He had some family money invested in the company when we started a few years back. He said, do you know his wife? I said, I've met her a few times. I don't know her that well. He said, how would you like to have her as your partner in the business if something happened to your partner? And I started scratching my head and I got a little nervous. And he said, have you ever heard of a buy-sell arrangement? And I said, maybe, I don't know. He said, well, it's in your corporate, you know, papers that you guys started, your charter. He said, I'm sure it's in the incorporation articles. Do you have a corporate attorney? I said, I do. He said, you know, at the end of the day, he said, he's probably put that together for you. He said, if you have one, I'm sure you do. He said, do you know if it's funded properly? I said, I don't understand what you're talking about. Then he made me nervous. And he basically told the story about if something happened to a partner, how the assets would be distributed, bought, sold through each partnership to the successor spouses, and the trouble that could create in a business. And we were a thriving young business 5 years in, netting a lot of money, making it, you know, really
last thing you're thinking about too, right? You're thinking, oh, I'm
about the contracts in the field and the employees and the geologists and the oil contracts and everything that we were doing. So that was the last thing I ever thought about until that day. And that was the only thing on my mind that entire weekend. So we got on the phone with the corporate attorney and found out that we did not have anything funded properly, and we acted quickly to do that.
Let's unpack that just for a second. So you talked about two things. You talked about a buy-sell arrangement where basically, what is it? One party agrees to buy out the other party at a set amount.
Yeah, it's a contractual agreement, and you can revisit the amount, the set amount, you know, per annum or every couple of years, depending on the growth of the firm, profitability of the firm. But it's a contractual agreement that basically says if partner A passes away or becomes disabled, disability is key here. I'll come back and visit that later with you if you want. But if a partner becomes disabled or passes away, then there should be a set value on his or her stock. And that set value is going to be contractually, the remaining partner or partners are going to be contractually obligated to purchase that stock for that set value. And that way the spouse or the family or the estate of the deceased partner can, you know, retain those monies from the firm, and the firm can retain the stock and go forth with the business's plan.
Yeah. For those of you guys listening out there, if you have a business partner, it kind of goes like this. If something happens to your business partner, do you already have a set value established for your company? And are you able to, like, do you have that money set aside? Because you're going to go through a tough spell. We'll get into Keyman too here in a little bit. But, you know, let's just say you lose one half of a partnership. That's going to be a pretty tough time. And a lot of companies don't survive it. You need cash to survive it generally. You need cash to buy out the interest of the party who passed or became disabled, and you need cash to continue to operate. So we're talking about two pieces to that. You have the agreement to buy out. And then, Dwayne, I'm going to assume that what you said is you didn't have it funded. So you had the agreement in place,
yes,
but you didn't have it funded. So you didn't have a mechanism other than, hey, I'm going to have to come out of pocket to pay this person off or their estate off.
Right.
How do you usually fund these things?
Yeah, then that was back to we had the agreement. So when we signed our incorporation articles and got started a few years earlier, we had the agreement in place. But it was funny. It was the original shares we put in. I think I put up $50,000 and the silent part put up $100,000. So it was a $1 par. So our business was at that point worth $150,000, the original investments. 2 years later, we were grossing $2 million, netting about $400,000 to $500,000 a year. We were worth a lot more.
So
we weren't funded to protect that growth, nor were we. The legal language didn't account for any future growth. So we had to do a lot of adjustments of 2 years in. The funding would come typically if you don't have a lot of cash on hand, which, as we know, most businesses are cash poor. Cash flow is always king in a business, and it's always going 500 directions. So to come up with, you know, $500,000 or $1 million to buy out a spouse, so to speak, of a deceased partner, that's going to be, it's like you said, it'll probably kill the business. So life insurance, that's the gorilla here in the cage we all sometimes don't like to talk about. But life insurance is the key to survival of a business and the death or disability of a partner.
In other words, you may think that you're going to live forever. In the unlikely situation that we're all mortal, but let's just say that you pass earlier than you thought, you know, 10 years into a business and somebody, it's unexpected that somebody goes, that's what you're insuring is like, hey, how do we deal with this situation? And there's really two sides to it, by the way. I mean, I tend to focus more on the, how does the business survive? So if that had happened to you, would that have had a major impact, or were you the main guy in the business?
Oh, I was the face of the business, the name on the wall. The silent partner was no more than an investment seed and maybe pushed a few cases our way here and there. But, you know, I was on the pavement every day. I was up to 42 professional scientists working for me, running five.
Let's flip it around then, Dwayne. Imagine I'm your partner.
Right.
And all I did is I put $100,000 in. And I really don't have day-to-day control.
Right.
So you went out and you have 42 engineers working for you. And what am I going to do? If something happens to you, how am I going to keep that company going? If I'm the guy that just put in the investment, how am I going to make sure that I protect my investment? How am I going to make sure that that company's transitioned?
Right.
And so let's talk about that. What are the ways to protect that person?
In the perfect world, you know, obviously there would be key managers in place. These key people would be running different divisions of the company at this point and could maintain some sort of profitability. Obviously, the loss of human power, having the CEO of the company, me, being gone, and the connections I had to those major clients, that would suffer some. But with some proper funding in place, you could go out and, you know, replace me, maybe not immediately, but you could find talent and replace that talent to come in and run an organization that's already been built. You know, that happens every day in the business world. If you have $500,000 in your pocket to go bonus somebody and entice them to come aboard, you'll steal someone. I hate to say it that way, but you can take someone from another marketplace, put them in your company, have them run it, and it won't suffer too much of a loss. That's the same thing with your key managers that you have on your staff.
Are you looking to lower your taxes, protect your assets, and grow your wealth? Are you a real estate investor, stock trader, or business owner? If you answered yes, Anderson Advisors Tax and Asset Protection Workshop is for you. Let host Clint Coons, Toby Mathis, and Michael Bowman teach you how to protect and keep more of what you earn. Our workshops are held monthly throughout the country and via live stream. Two in-person tickets to the workshop are only $99. To learn more about the dates and locations, visit AndersonAP.com and register today.
Kind of look at it like this. So let's go back to that same scenario. Let's say that I'm your partner and I'm not even a professional. I'm not even an engineer and I'm running engineers. I'm going to have to hire somebody pretty high potent. Either that, or I'm going to have to promote from within, or I'm going to have to bring in another company perhaps can acquire. All of that's going to require that the company continue to survive and thrive during that time. And the only way it's going to do that is if you have the money to give you that buffer. And keep in mind that you're buying out the family of the previous partner, depending on what your agreement says.
Right.
So what's the way to fund that? When, what is that called?
Yeah, that's again, you know, in this scenario that I had, I was actually a business owner, a shareholder, but I was also the key man. So I was one of the, you know, I was the top key man in the company. We had four or five eventually, but I was the key man. So there's additional insurance on my life that would go to the surviving partner or the partnership. So now he has funds to go out and replace the talent if he lost me. And he also has the funds to buy out my spouse and children of the estate, or however that would be lined up with the surviving.
Now, there's a couple ways to look at this. I'll just tell you from the tax side, a lot of folks immediately go into, can I deduct this as an expense? And I'm going to say typically no, but there are a few cases where it could be. And it's usually if there's a big obligation of the firm. So was your firm pretty lean and mean, or did it have some obligations?
Typically it was the only obligations were age payables to contractors or subcontractors. We were pretty profitable. We were running 20% net plus on a couple million, so annually. We didn't have much cash, though, because we had a large payroll. We paid our employees well, 40 people on staff professionals. You can imagine the payroll is half of our gross take, so not much cash on hand ever. That would have been detrimental to business to not be funded if something would happen to us.
Mm-hmm. So let's go back to your business. So we're insuring Dwayne in the event that something happens to Dwayne, and that could be disability too, right? You're hit by a truck and you're
just life insurance, talking about disability insurance, other types of insurance would cover even critical illnesses or injuries, things of that nature, all wrapped into maybe one contained policy now.
So you do one policy that covers both.
Right.
If Dwayne gets into a car accident and is not able to continue to run that company, he can't be right. the head. Or maybe he's just, maybe it's a year. Maybe you're in recovery mode.
That's right.
There's monies that go to the company generally in a key man policy that allow the company to weather that storm.
Yeah, a little bit different than your personal disability. Maybe me as the owner, I had personal disability to replace my income from mm-hmm. an insurance carrier. And then the corporation had disability coverage. It would replace my functionability, my ability to earn profits while I was out for a year or two on the sidelines.
And this is really important for those folks that are passive investors or gap funders or something where you have a project going on. So, I mean, I can use a personal example, Dwayne. I'm interested in your take on it. So we did a sublet years ago where we were having to get bigger space and we had a really nice space that somebody else wanted. They said, hey, we'll come in. So we just said, hey, we're going to insure that individual. They looked at us like we were from Mars. But we said, well, you're going to sublet this space, but if something happens to you, we're still obligated underneath that lease. And this was not a cheap lease. This was several hundred thousand dollars a year. So we said, hey, we just want to make sure you have term insurance during the term of this period. It was only about a 5-year period. And so we just said, hey, buy term insurance. We'll pay for it so that if something happens to you, that it pays off that lease. So we don't have to worry about the obligation. Do you see that situation arise and people miss it?
Yeah. I mean, people overlook that quite often just because it's not obvious. Things like traditionally you think two partners, three partners, somebody dies, you want to protect them, buy their spouse out. That's traditional. But there's so many segues of a corporate succession planning, and it gets into a lot deeper. Partnerships, solid investors, hard money lenders, just like you mentioned in that case, there's so many different. Last night I had dinner. I'm here on the coast for a couple of days on the East Coast. I had dinner with a good friend. He's a partner. He started the business 32 years ago. He's succeeding it now to a nephew, a family member. And he's going through each year a little more proportional buyouts, but they're buying out all the other partners. So this gentleman's going back and buying out the 2% and 3% and 4% shares they let out early to entice employees in. Now they're buying these guys out at retirement, and now he's passing this business down to the nephew. So I was going through all the structured life insurance. There's millions and millions of dollars of life insurance in this firm. I've done it all for a decade with them. So it's so many angles to this business, and it doesn't just stop with the sale of the first policy. It continues all the way through the succession of the business to the last partner. Now my junior partners in my firm are working with the junior partner who's receiving those shares, and we're building up his insurance portfolio to protect his family. So it's a continuous plan. As long as the business is growing and moving downfield, we have to move with the business partners as they succeed their shares and sell their shares and die off and become disabled, et cetera.
That gets complicated, right? So this isn't something you do on your own.
Learn it overnight, and it's good to have some sort of a professional in the industry that's got credentials. When you're looking for someone, make sure they have credentials in this industry.
Now, when you say credentials, so could I just go to my local insurance guy? Could I just go to State Farm or whatever and just?
They're good at they're very good at what they do. They're well rounded. They sell homeowners and things like property and casualty. The depth of this type of planning is more into you have to have your attorney has to be on board, your tax people have to be on board. But the planning that we do is a specialized type of planning. I've got, I would say, if not hundreds, at least maybe 1,000 hours or more studying this, if not hundreds or more plus. But credentialing, you take specific courses and then you apply it to my 20 years of experience plus working just with business owners. So you got to look for the right professional who specializes, just like you wouldn't go to a tax attorney to do XYZ, or you wouldn't
get a divorce.
Yeah.
Actually, maybe you should. Right? No, I'm just kidding. Alimony's not deductible anymore, man. That's scary. If somebody needs to get a hold of you, like somebody's in that situation where they have unfunded obligations, or they're relying on somebody else to do something and they have a sizable investment. So for example, I'm a gap funder. I put a bunch of money into a joint venture with a contractor, and that contractor is going to do all the rehab or something. And there's a magic number where maybe I should have insurance on that contractor, because if that contractor passes, I'm going to have to finish that project, right? I'm going to need the money. What's the magic number where you really should be looking at it insuring something like that?
Well, obviously in the insurance business, if you're talking about strictly life insurance, typically $50,000 is the minimum life insurance value you can write with any company.
Right.
But way to look at that, and a simple answer, as I meet with business owners or investors, I say, how much can you stomach to lose in a bad situation? Think of the worst situation that could happen with this investment while you're active in it. How much can you afford to lose and walk away from? If they say none, I said, then that needs to be insured.
Yep. Now, so you said the magic number is 50,000 is the smallest, but obviously that's probably too small. Somebody puts $50,000, they're not going to go say, hey, I'm going to get it insurance, unless it's really, really cheap. Now, we were talking before about some buy sells and some other folks. How much is insurance nowadays? So if I am just insuring something that's for a short period of time, hey, we're doing a rehab on a property, how much are we talking about?
Yeah, temporary coverage, and let's say the investors are in their 40s. You're talking about, you know, $30, $40, $50 a month to cover a small product. Or
yeah, I just want to sink that in. We're talking about $30 or $40 a month to cover. And how much are we talking there?
$1,000 investment, $150,000 investment, $40 a month will cover it.
Yep. Think about that. You're paying more for the property insurance than you are to cover your investment in the event somebody has an. And by the way, I've seen this personally at a personal friend who was in the middle of a large development. He and both gentlemen were actually friends of mine that I've known for a long time. They were friends of my mentor, and they were doing a big development. And at 52, one of them passes away of a heart attack. And the ex-spouse, or I should say the spouse of the decedent, the spouse of the guy who passed away, hated the other partner, like hated, and tied that project up for a good 2 years because they didn't have any such documentation. They didn't have the buy-sell, which would have just paid her off. Right. And they didn't have key man, which meant the guy went through financial hell to try to get that project completed. I just remember that. That was a long time ago. That was probably more than 15 years ago that I saw that. But it was one of those things that left an impression because I was like, who would have thunk it? Who would have thunk that that's what would have happened?
Yeah, we've all been in the business as long as we have, you and I, Toby. I've seen several cases where it's, you know, it's been very detrimental to the family and or the business or both.
Attention all real estate investors, business owners, stock traders, and anyone looking to get out of the rat race for good. We all know time is money, but did you know there's a wealth of resources on how to make more money, keep more money, and protect what you've earned all for free online? Anderson Business Advisors YouTube channel offers free resources on asset protection and tax reduction from lawyers and CPAs designed to help you keep more money in your pocket. To learn how to limit your liability, protect what you've earned, and minimize your tax burden all for free, subscribe to Anderson Business Advisors on YouTube today.
What's one that you could explain? I love stories. So do you have any stories that stick out in your head?
I mean, several. There's good ones and bad ones, but I guess I could play a story with a couple of business owners that I know years ago. This is not a good case. This was actually when I was just getting in the business before I was credentialed, was chatting with them about some employee insurance and this and that. But at the end of the day, one partner was just, he was against insurance. Mm-hmm. He's just like, no, I don't want to put anything, any money out there. I don't believe in it. It's just it's something to bury. It's for final expense. And unfortunately, what happened is that partner passed a couple of years later. He had a heart attack, actually at work, and passed there in the office place in his 50s. And I was a new guy in the business, insurance business, and I'd seen this business operate because we were doing some employee health insurance. Well, his spouse was not left in, he was not a good investor with his money, wasn't a good steward of his finances, and he left his wife and two college-age children in a bad way. That's a bad story. I've got great stories too, obviously.
Well, you think about it. All you're doing is entering into an agreement. So I use doctors as an example because a lot of times the spouse isn't a medical doctor. They can't run the business.
That's right.
So you always look at it saying, do you have colleagues that you could sell to? And do you want to go up and have an agreement with them that says, hey, if I pass, you take on all my patients. You buy an insurance policy on me, you keep it up, and the beneficiary is my spouse in exchange for those shares.
Correct.
So if somebody passes, the money goes to the surviving spouse, there's cash, the company goes to the party and all they were out was those premium payments over the years, which, as we just said, can be pretty small.
Yeah, you want to look at it that way, because at the end of the day, you're growing a company, and you know, you grow a company for profit, but a company, typically the employees of the company, close-knit bunch, especially the closely held companies, it's a family.
Yep.
So if you take care of your family with a properly funded buy sell agreement, your spouse and your children take care of, what about all those other families that put their trust in you as a business owner, as a leader, as a developer?
When you have employees, you owe them a responsibility too, to make sure that business doesn't just topple if something happens to you.
So that other company coming in and purchasing or buying you out and taking over and taking the helm and guiding those employees downfield, that's a whole other part of the agreement.
Yep. Now, it's easy when you have partners, but what if you're just a single person? Then how have you seen these work?
Well, I mean, sole proprietors or single owner, single member LLCs or professional corporations. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of planning you do. Obviously, they're more focused on what's going to happen to maybe my employees. It might be a small group of employees. It might be a large group of employees if they've grown properly. Same scenario we just mentioned. They might, you know, go across town to a competitor, a friendly competitor, and say, hey, you know, if something happens to me, let's get an agreement between ourselves. I want you to take over these assets. I want you to take over this company. I want you to move it forward when I'm gone. And I also want, you know, my spouse to be properly taken care of. That's one situation you get into. But again, using insurance products or different types of investments for that person to set up a succession. Because what happens when you get to quote unquote retirement age? Is the goal of every business owner just to take the cash out, retire, and close the doors? Probably not. Mm-hmm. It's a pride factor at this point. So pride goes along with, hey, you know, I'm proud of what I've built. Just like my friend here on the East Coast we had dinner with last night. He's proud of his company. He doesn't have children. He's passing it to his nephew, his daughter's or his wife's nephew. So he's become a family member. So the pride factor is, I want this $30 or $40 million corporation I've built over 30 years, I want it to continue a legacy in my name. So there's a legacy types of planning you can do around that single sole member.
Yep. And while they're alive, it's easy.
Yeah.
Where the sticky wicket is, they're disabled. They have Alzheimer's or something. Like, again, I always use my father as an example, since he had Alzheimer's for a lot of years before he passed.
Right.
There's a transition period. It rarely does someone, like we hear about it, somebody passes away, but quite often they're incapacitated for a number of years before they pass. And so you have to have the transition period covered as well. You know, again, it's easy when you're alive. You can transition the shares. If something happens to you and they're not all transitioned, you could document that ahead of time. Solo practitioner, you would just have a key man policy on them too, in case they wanted their doctors underneath them. For example, if it was a professional medical practice, maybe they want to allow somebody else to come in and run the practice.
Right.
Well, you just lost the main person. That company is going to need some money. But again, they'd want to have that discussion while they're healthy. Right. With those parties, saying, hey, I have a key man policy. It's going to dump some money in. Here's what I want you to do if anything happens.
Yeah, we don't do this type of planning from the hospital bed when it's too late. It's just, you know, once you've experienced that health crisis in your life, your insurability, you know, maybe becomes extinct. I mean, you might get insurance. It might be super expensive now. It may not even be affordable at that point. So obviously, while we're functional, we're healthy, we're running our business, we have to put this, you know, not all the way to the side. Mm-hmm. We have to put it close enough and accessible enough to where we look at it at least every couple of years, because when you need it and you don't have it, we get those calls.
It's too late.
Yeah.
But you can always transition. Again, you talked about retirement planning. There's a lot of benefits. There's a lot of tax benefits just being I'm a tax attorney, obviously.
Oh, sure.
And I look at it and say, hey, there's some huge benefits that come with these policies. You can marry those together, and you could be covering, you know, killing two birds with one stone, so to speak, saying, hey, I'm going to make sure I have a great retirement. But if something does happen, I'm going to make sure that my family gets a big chunk of cash and my business survives. Hey, Dwayne, how does somebody get a hold of you if they do want to talk to you?
Yeah, sure. You can just go to the Anderson Financial Services website and look us up there. My direct number, it's open all the time to anyone. I can give you the cell phone number as well. It's 912-856-5007.
Yep. And I'll post all that information so people can see it. So you're at the Anderson Financial Services. And again, we work closely with a number of advisors, Dwayne being one of the great ones there. Obviously, part of our excellent group, lots of experience. thank you for coming in and sharing a little bit about BuySells and Keyman. If there's one takeaway that you want people to walk away with, what would it be?
Yeah, it's just like I was when I was young in the business, in the engineering services business. You know, you have a lot to live for. You live and breathe your business. I mean, it's 24/7, you know, it is. And you put a lot of things to the side, and your time with the family sometimes suffers because you're trying to build something. And mm-hmm. at the end of the day, I've seen it so many times, Toby, that, you know, you put all this time, effort, energy into building something for a reason. Everybody has their own reason. Protect that reason.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I like that. Yeah. Whatever your reason is, protect it.
That's right.
That. No, hey, that's fantastic. Thanks again, Dwayne. I really appreciate it. If anybody needs to get a hold of him, I'll put the information up on the website. Again, if you're protecting any sort of investment, even like you're just a partner in a business, or you have employees, or you have an investment that's out there, you want to make sure it's protected. Talk to a guy like Dwayne to make sure that you're insuring it, so that if something happens, you know, it's inevitable that we're all going to hit it. If it happens sooner than later, that you're protected, absolutely, so that you can make sure that you don't suffer needlessly as a result of something that's very predictable. Thanks, Dwayne.
Thanks, Toby. Appreciate you having me on.
Thank you for listening to today's podcast. Show notes for links to everything mentioned in this episode can be found on our website at andersonadvisors.com/podcast. Be sure you subscribe to our podcast, and if you are already a subscriber, please provide us a review of what you thought of this episode.